This is the 20th season of the Consumed podcast. I'm your host, Jamie Lewis. And this time around, I'm doing a quick retrospective with clips from the over 200 conversations I've had with eaters, drinkers, thinkers, and makers. I certainly can't include clips from all of them, so I stuck with the moments that have stuck with me over the last 5 years. I categorize them by the different kinds of guests I've had, so it's a great way for devoted listeners to look back or for casual listeners to dip in. I have so enjoyed reliving these moments, and I hope you will too. But first, a quick shout out to the Consumed podcast sponsors. Consumed is sponsored by Midstate Containers Cargo Storage Containers and Refrigerated Shipping Containers for sale and rent in California. You may not understand how Midstate Containers could change your life, but the truth is, many, many guests on the Consumed podcast use Midstate for their projects. Containers can serve as wine storage units for case goods, for private collections, and even tasting rooms. They can be refrigerated storage containers for breweries, kegs, and fruit during harvest for wineries. Midstate Containers outfits coolers and freezers for ranchers, farmers market growers, orchards, and butchers. Containers can make great pop-up coffee bars and berry containers for root cellars. My guest from season 10, Krista Flieger from Lonely Palm Ranch, uses her Midstate container for an office on her property. Other ideas include schoolrooms, music and photography studios, and there are other things that can be grown, stored, and processed in a Midstate container, so use your imagination and get on their website to request a quote, midstatecontainers.com. Slow Food Co-op's mission is to empower health and well-being in the community by providing quality groceries, local produce, and exceptional customer service. Slow Food Co-op sources from local producers, ensuring they offer their shoppers great food and household staples. Slow Food Co-op is your friendly neighborhood grocer, maintaining non-GMO standards and a variety of organic selections. You can find Slow's only community-owned grocery store open every day, 8 a.m. to 8 p.m., at 2494 Victoria Avenue in San Luis Obispo, California. And check out their website at slowfood.coop. So here's the episode about the people who grow and harvest what we eat, from vegetable and aquaculture farmers to ranchers and poultry experts. Zach Andrade is a commercial farmer in Gilroy whose family-owned company, Spinaca Farms, has been through the ringer. I had him on in one of the earliest seasons of the podcast, and it has stuck with me through the years how he survived the company going bankrupt, all in the midst of him and his wife expecting their first child, and the lengths he would go to rebuild the business.
I made a decision that it was our fault. It was the decisions that we made that put us in the position for that to happen. And so once I did that, as opposed to, you know, blaming this person or that person or a bad contract or, you know, tough employees or anything like that, it made it a lot easier to make the next decision, which was that, you know, my unborn child wasn't going to pay for, you know, for my mistakes or mistakes that I was, you know, partly responsible for. And so once I did that, I just hit the phones. I had cultivated some friendships that, had led those friends to become buyers at places. And so I called them up and I said, hey, this is what's going on. What do you need? Are you looking for something? You know, I can go buy it. And so I just started brokering, and, you know, my mom was doing the books, and, you know, my dad would run out and check fields. And, you know, we had, you know, people in Santa Maria willing to take a little bit of a risk, you know, on a couple products for us, and, built it back up. We had one customer, and that customer was going to get whatever they wanted when they wanted. And that was it. That was the bottom line. I mean, we had a situation where, you know, you only get a couple of strikes with these customers before they turn to someone else. And so we had a strike against, you know, a truck showed up late, you know, that was a strike one, you know, the buyer can only protect you for so long before they catch a bunch of heat. And, it was like, you know, something else happened. And then, you know, we were selling them broccoli florets, but they wanted it iceless because they were afraid of the origin of the water that made the ice that could potentially be a vector for a pathogen. And so, I get a call from the trucking company that's picking up these iceless broccoli florets, and they're like, hey, there's ice in it. And it's like snow cone ice. They just blow it in there. And so it was like 11 o'clock at night. So I got my ass out of bed and I went down there and I picked the ice out of the broccoli florets.
Oh my gosh.
And because I didn't have a, there was no strike three.
No plan B.
No plan B at that point. You know, we were still, you know, everything that we were making was going to pay for legal fees to, you know, fight the vendors and, you know, try and clear our name essentially, you know? So it was, it was a tough go for a long time.
I will never forget my conversation with Captain Mark Tognazzini, a commercial fisherman out of Morro Bay who's been on the ocean for over 40 years. He's a great storyteller, and this one about his worst day on the ocean with his vessel, the Bonnie Marietta, is one that sticks in my memory for obvious reasons.
Tell me, since you said that you've had some bad days, I want to hear maybe your worst day out
On the ocean. July.
Oh wow, you know the date.
July 5th, I think, 2005. I put the Bonnie Marietta on the rocks at Point Sur.
Oh my!
Fell asleep at the wheel, and put her hard aground. I was running up and down the coast selling fish off the boat, and that year the fish were all up above, so I'd have to fish at Half Moon Bay or San Francisco, and then I'd run home to sell off the boat on the weekends, because once you build up that clientele of people coming to see you, you don't want to disappoint them.
No, you don't want to run out.
Oh, and so I was running up and down the beach, and I delivered, I think it was a Sunday actually, and I delivered in Morro Bay, and I was running back up the beach, and of course you try to cut all the corners as much as you can, because it you can get up the coast quicker that way, and it's a long transit out in front of San Francisco to Morro Bay. It's a 24-hour transit for a boat. Commercial fishing boat. And so it's a long transit. And so you're running day and night and stuff. And I had a watch alarm set. A watch alarm is a item that you set for a predetermined amount of time, and it will go off if you fall asleep and it startles you awake. Mm-hmm. Well, I'd set the watch alarm and I was cutting the coast and I fell asleep. And about probably 10 seconds, 15 seconds after I went aground, the watch alarm goes off. I should have probably set it for 15 minutes instead of 20 or whatever I did at the time. And so I went hard aground. I have a really tough boat and it has all the safety stuff on it. I have lots of pumps. I knew I couldn't lay there and roll around on the rocks. Mm-mm. And so I powered it. I put it in reverse and I powered it off. The keel had gotten, the rudder shoe had gotten shoved up into the propeller. I didn't know at the time, but I was able to clear it away with the power of the engine. And I got just far enough away from the rocks. I threw the anchor, went down and made sure all the pumps were keeping up. And, I was kind of against the bluffs there. And in 205, you know, cell traffic wasn't, I couldn't get out on the radio, but I could get out on my cell phone. And I don't know why. And so anyhow, I called the Coast Guard. They finally got me up on the radio. And actually, my connection with the guys in Morro Bay, it was Chief Shannon at the time. He actually was going to come all the way from Morro Bay with one of the boats to get me. But Coast Guard out of Monterey came and got me. And they towed me to Monterey, and they hauled me out there. And about 30 days later and $25,000 poorer, I was back fishing.
Right back out there.
But, and you know, it was, I did it. I did it to myself. And I'm not the only guy who's ever done that.
Of course not.
And it's kind of part of the business.
For the podcast, I was lucky enough to meet Elizabeth Poet, a seventh generation cattle rancher at Rancho San Julian in Lompoc, California. She's also the star of the Magnolia Network cooking show, The Ranch Table, in which she shares recipes and glimpses into her beautiful life in Santa Barbara County. I hustled very hard to get this interview, driving out to Rancho San Julian through green hills over a stream to her historic home. The whole drive in, I was like, surely it's not as wonderful as it looks on her show. Surely that's just smoke and mirrors. But I was so wrong. That place really is as pretty and idyllic as it looks on screen. And Elizabeth even had a pitcher of iced tea and a warm coffee cake to serve when I arrived. We sat under a long pergola in her front yard to talk. And at one point I asked, what would you say to someone who watches your show and sees the way you grow your own produce and harvest your own beef and cook beautiful foods, and then that person says, that would be impossible for me? Here's how she answered.
I think that if you are having fun in the kitchen, I think that is what I'm trying to do. Mm-hmm. That is what I'm trying to inspire people. That it is not perfect. That it is not... clean cut, that we do what we do. I'm a mom. I feed my kids what I can, mm-hmm. when I can. And like, we just do our best.
Yeah.
And we're all doing our best.
Yeah.
I do think there is this, sometimes I feel like there is this aura around cooking though, that is just so intimidating.
Yeah.
And rightly so, there are amazing chefs, especially in our area, that yeah. I am just, you know, enthralled by, that they have just done amazing. They're artists in their yeah. own right. But my hope is to inspire people to cook and have fun with it, and have mm-hmm. friends over, and to share, and to connect with your community. That's more what I would like to inspire. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's lovely to be able to go to a farmer's market and pick out fresh things, because I think it helps you get more inspired.
Yeah.
Or at least it inspires me. But it's definitely something that we're all human.
Yeah.
We're right. we're all working. We're all trying to make this work.
Yeah.
It's just something that for me, food does bring joy. And my hope is that I can share that with others.
Another guest with long roots on California's Central Coast is Daniel Sinton, a fifth-generation cattle rancher who owns Avenalis Ranch in Chandon. He came on the podcast for a bonus episode with local meat distributor Jensen Lorenzen to talk about the imminent unsustainability of the nation's meat supply chain, how ranchers are handcuffed by it, and how Avenalis and several other local suppliers are trying to change the system and move markets. Here, Daniel describes an early attempt to interrupt the supply chain.
I went to a restaurant recently and that pumps out burgers, and I said, let me do a local burger with you. I can get beef straight to you. And I said, just tell me what the price is that you can get it at. And he told me, and I said, I can't even raise animal at that price. Straight off my ranch, I can't give you that price.
No competition.
It doesn't make any sense. And so, and going back to the system, is they're I don't even want to have that burger anymore, because I know what that looks like. I know what that animal looks like mm-hmm. when it gets into that system, and what they're eating, and the place that they're living in. Mm-hmm. And as a rancher, that's really difficult for me to talk about, because it's like this weird cloud that's sitting out there, and if you poke at it, it's gonna shit all over you. Mm-hmm. Like, that system is terrifying, and ranchers don't speak out about it, because it's truly been our only system that we can provide into. And if somebody heard me saying this, maybe I get cut off, and then I don't have a place to sell
right.
my cattle.
So you're kind of on an IV with them. With the system.
Totally.
Yeah.
Sometimes I feel like I really understand what a guest is saying, because I've experienced the same kinds of feelings or situations. Not so with this story from Neil Maloney, the owner and farmer behind the Morro Bay Oyster Company. He shares here about studying aquaculture on an oyster farm in Cabo San Lucas and the hurricane that changed his life.
The content of what I was learning was amazing, and they had the hurricane season, which I had no idea about, because I didn't pay attention to what the news was happening. Apparently they get like 10 or 12 hurricanes every year down in Cabo.
Suddenly it matters to you.
Yeah. 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 Right. So they're passing right by our door, 20 kilometers offshore. And so the cages that they grew, that they were holding the pearl oysters in, were 60 feet down. And I had just completed a diving course through PADI certified diving down there, which was amazing. We're in like 84 degree water at 60 feet down, wow. like 100-foot visibility. This was like, this wow. is where I really got into the lifestyle of it. Yeah. And the tacati was really good down
yeah,
there.
Always.
And so yeah. After the hurricane, their pens all got flipped over and like disheveled. And so they had me go down in 60 feet. I'm down there holding a rope with a buoy on it. And another guy is, we've tied off a rope to one of the cages, and the boat up there is going to tow it to flip it. And so I'm using a buoy and he's using a buoy to kind of tell the boat which direction to go, to kind of get in line with each
High
other.
High tech communication. Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm sitting there, and then just a school of sardines is surrounding me, and they're just, and then as I'm staring straight up 60 feet of water, there's just tuna fish darting in, and I'm just like immersed in this. And I was sitting down there just thinking like, this is what I'm going to do.
You were happy about, see, when you
oh,
tell me
yeah.
that, I start to panic.
Oh,
like,
it was just
how
amazing.
Am I going to get out of here?
There was a little bit of that food chain moment, but
sure.
I just, you know, It was amazing. It was just amazing. I'm sitting here like these cages, this man-made structure 60 feet down. We're solving problems after a huge catastrophe. And this business is depending on what we do. And it's all in the middle of like deep, rich nature. It was just pretty amazing.
Anyone who's a devoted listener might remember my talk with Barbara Bullock, who I call the chicken whisperer, because she's the local expert that places like Farm Supply direct their chicken-owning customers when they have a question or a problem. I have a personal connection to Barbara after she helped save the life of my little Buff Orpington hen when she was sick. Here, Barbara describes how she became so knowledgeable about chickens and fowl.
I started as a child. We grew up on a large ranch here in San Luis Obispo, and there was 8 siblings, and we all had responsibilities on the ranch, and mine seemed to be chickens, poultry, from a very, very early age, and I learned to care for them, to feed, water, and watch for diseases and problems. Sometimes there would be 200-300 chickens running on the ranch.
Oh my gosh.
And of course, coyotes and predators would bring that number down. And then of course, there would be food for the family, eggs and meat. And so we would have a lot of roosters certain times a year. We would have in our freezer and all. Just loved the chickens. I still to this day enjoy very much helping people with their small flocks. I am not a veterinarian, and I let that be known, but I am very knowledgeable in a lot of ways of basic care of birds and some of the diseases and problems they acquire. Many of them are simple solutions, and others can be more complicated. Sometimes you have to weigh what's best for that bird. I do enjoy helping a lot of people, and Farm Supply, our local feed store, has always kept my number just to keep people informed and knowledgeable about how to take care of these birds.
That's it for this quick stroll down memory lane on the Consumed podcast. To hear these interviews and many others, head to letsgetconsumed.com, where you can search and peruse episodes, see photos, and get recipes. You can also sign up for the Consumed newsletter list, which offers updates on the podcast, more recipes, and even more than that. Special thanks to Chris Lambert for doing the original editing on all these episodes, and to Alexandra Wallace for the lovely collage celebrating the 20th season. Until next time, I'm Jamie Lewis.